Item five.
Mr. Chair, as you recall, last board meeting, you directed us to reopen the comment period for 2 weeks and bring back a document with some redrafts. We got a number of comments. We got also a lot of late comments. What we're recommending for today is for you to hear the item, take comments. We will walk you through the changes that we have made, but we'll be recommending that you hold the item over. And we'll bring back a clean copy if that's your desire for January.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Good morning. Hales, members of the board.
Brian, let me just open this up as the hearing procedure.
Okay.
That's okay. I'll take care of that really quick. So this is the time and the place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adopting resolution R1-2011-0069, policy for implementation of the water quality objective for temperature in the North Coast Region. This item has been properly noticed. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Great, thank you. Great. Brian, please.
Well, good morning. I'm here to follow up on the ongoing temperature policy resolution effort. And I'm prepared to talk today about, first, an overview of the changes that were made up to September 29th, and talk about the comments that we've received since that time, and go over changes to the resolution that have been made since September. You know, before I get into this presentation, I do want to acknowledge the input that we'd received from the public and the helpful dialogue that we entered into with stakeholders. I appreciated it. It helped me through the process. I hope they feel served well. And unfortunately, or maybe not unfortunately, but as the case is, some of the comments that were given to us just really didn't fit into this resolution or weren't appropriate, so we couldn't accommodate all the comments and requests, but I think that the process was a good one, and I thank all the stakeholders for their efforts. So those comments before September 29th, as you'll recall, resulted in a number of changes to the resolution. We added language that clarified the intent and purpose, and deleted other text that was unnecessary and had confused some of the public. A lot of these changes further clarified that any implementation of the objective occurs in a permitting process that also has a public process, that this resolution doesn't establish any criteria or tie us into any one specific approach other than to use our existing authorities to implement the water quality objective for temperature. So now I'll dive into the comments that we'd received since the last board meeting. I think the one of the biggest comments that we received question the water board's authority over factors that affect water quality beyond discharges of waste. The authority in Port of Cologne clearly lays out that we are to regulate the discharge of waste for the beneficial uses of California, but it also is broader than that. The legislative history on Port of Cologne is clear that the legislature intended for this body of law to go much further than just discharges of waste. In the legislative report leading up to the adoption of Port of Cologne, the report cites other factors besides discharge of waste that are critical for the control of water quality. It mentions saltwater intrusion, impoundments, and land use as factors that need to be considered, controlled, and addressed through Port of Cologne. And what we're talking about today is clearly in that category. The same commenter made a point about the fact that the Clean Water Act doesn't relate to non-point sources, and that's a bit of an overstatement. It's true that the Clean Water Act permitting only applies to point sources, but it's clearly intended to address non-point sources, and that's been affirmed by the court in the Pronsolino decision that came out of the Garcia process, or that was related to the Garcia TMDL process. So our basin plan is a marriage of both state and federal law, and it identifies programs of implementation that need to be implemented regardless of our authority. Other agencies with authority need to consider what's in the basin plan when they apply their authority. So on the note of controllable factors, this policy deals heavily with controllable water quality factors. A comment was made that controllable factors is not a term that appears in Port of Cologne. And while that's true, Port of Cologne discusses controllable factors using different language, but clearly it's controllable factors. It gives us authority over water quality control, which, again, is broad. It's the regulation of activities, any activity or factor, which may affect the quality of the waters of the state. If you did a word search for controllable factors, this sentence wouldn't come up. But clearly, this language indicates that controllable factors are to be considered and addressed, and this is straight out of the Water Code, section 13050. So we're talking about temperature and heat, and sources of heat can come from thermal discharges, but clearly they also come from controllable factors. Shade removal is one of those controllable factors. A comment that we received was that the fission processes on the sun that lead to the solar radiation are not controllable, and we wouldn't dispute that for sure. But the physical removal of a tree that allows for more of that radiation to reach a water body is clearly controllable. So just a little more on controllable factors, since clearly is the key here. The Water Code makes it clear that when the water boards are implementing waste discharge requirements, that we're to consider more than just discharges of waste. I'll read a sentence from the Water Code talking about waste discharge requirements. The requirements shall implement any relevant water quality control plans that have been adopted and shall take into consideration the beneficial uses to be protected, the water quality objectives reasonably required for that purpose, and other waste discharges that need to prevent nuisance and the provisions of Section 13241. So right there in the Water Code, we have direction to address controllable factors in our waste discharge authorities. So the way this comes up in our waste discharge permits related to or that affect temperature is, we focus on riparian management in this policy. Riparian management addresses a number of things that could be considered discharges of waste. And so when we enter into that exercise, we also have to consider the controllable factors, not just the discharges of waste. The Water Board's authority is very broad, but it does have limits. And we strive to implement in a reasonable, responsible, and efficient way. This resolution, as I said before, it doesn't predetermine any specific action or requirement. It defers mitigations for temperature to permitting processes and requires that any mitigations be based on relevant factors for a site-specific situation as appropriate and necessary. So I'm going to kind of change gears here. We had another body of comments that related to how this resolution relates to the stipulated agreement between the board and the Sierra Club on TMDL implementation. I would first just point out that that stipulated agreement doesn't call for any deliverables until 2013. We have a basin plan amendment process that's going to take us there in the meantime, and there could be changes. The stipulation contemplates a public process such as this one in which changes would be made based on that public process. And in this case, an example of that is in this case the guidance document. We started out with a guidance document identified in the resolution, but based on public input and the process that we follow here, that has been removed. I want to point out that this policy includes all the policy elements that were identified in the stipulated agreement, with the exception of that guidance document. The description, and I have the stipulated agreement here, the description of the sediment policy that this policy was to model describes it as a policy to implement the sediment TMDLs using existing authorities. It then describes the temperature policy as an analogous policy that would implement the temperature objective using existing authorities. At no time or in no place in this stipulated agreement is there mention of a work plan or a schedule or an MOU. We feel like a temperature work plan at this point is not necessary and would be redundant. The comments that we received made a lot about the fact that the sediment policy directed a work plan, and that work plan had a lot of detail about what needs to be done to implement sediment TMDLs. I would point out that many of those things are contained in this policy. An example of that is our permitting program for irrigated agriculture, our permitting program for dairies, our permitting program for county roads. Those are all identified in the work plan. They're also identified here. I'd also point out that when we implement sediment controls in our permitting programs, we're also addressing temperature. And so there's a bit of redundancy there. Another comment that was made was that this policy doesn't require or direct our executive officer to enter into a memorandum of understanding with the Division of Water Rights. It's not required in the stipulation, and our coordination with the Division of Water Rights is spelled out in a state policy that provides a template for how we're to work with the Division of Water Rights. It may be that it's appropriate and helpful to have a memorandum of understanding with Division of Water Rights in the future, but at this point, it's not a good use of our time. Another comment that was made in regards to the policy had to do with the use of the word should versus shall. You know, this came up in the other round of comments, and you'll recall that this isn't a rulemaking process. It's not appropriate to have the word shall in there, but this is direction to staff, and the should is appropriate. It directs staff to consider things. It doesn't direct staff to take a specified approach that leads to a predetermined outcome. The resolution has no regulatory effect, and so should is appropriate. The requirements for implementing the temperature objective are things that are going to be determined in the future through the permitting processes that we implement based on the site-specific conditions and factors. And those permitting processes have their own public process that people will have the opportunity to weigh in on those specifics. Oops. So at this point, I'd like to walk you through the changes to the resolution that we've prepared. I'd say there's three categories that these comments fall under. One are simple editorial changes, capitalization, grammar, spelling, those sorts of things. I apologize. I have to say that. another category are minor wording changes. They're a change nonetheless. And then finally, there's a couple of items that are more still minor but substantive changes that I want to call to your attention. And so I understand you have a copy of the proposed changes. And I'm going to go through page by page, but I would really like to just highlight those that are those changes that are more than just the editorial changes. But of course, if you have any questions, stop me at any time.
Yeah, Brian, I think that going off of Ms. Coleman's recommendation for spending a little bit more time and bringing back a cleaner version in January rather than focusing on some of the more smaller grammatical things, you can hit some of the more salient, bigger, broader issues rather than go through a specific item by item. We'll still have time to be able to read through and digest and understand, if that's all right. Great.
That's great. there's some clarification in at the end of finding number two about the in-stream flow objective. It's described in shorthand. There's a note here that's been added that, you know, that we're referring to the watershed hydrology objective. Many editorial changes between there and finding number 22, where we added the word can in the last sentence. Just as a point of clarification that it doesn't always have to be that way, but it might be that way. Chairman Hales, do you want me to go over those kind of changes, or were you telling me that that's not what you want to hear at this point?
Yeah, those are fine. I guess the ones that you feel are, you know, really, you know, obviously there's some that are, you know, like you said, capitalization and things like that.
Right.
We don't need to focus on those, but some of the things that in your opinion and what you've been working on and the comments that you've been receiving that, you know, required a little bit more attention and thought.
So, okay, great. Right. Well, then I would point you to finding number 26, where we acknowledge in the last two sentences, second to last and third to last sentence, where this topic was overly stated, that sediment conditions interact with water in many ways that can affect temperature. We didn't have the word can in there. It doesn't always affect temperature. Sometimes there are beneficial interactions of sediment and water in regards to temperature. This is just acknowledging that it's complex. not always detrimental to water temperature or always affecting water temperatures. Likewise, there's language like that in the next sentence. Sediment discharges can also help control elevated water temperatures. The next finding, finding 27, near the bottom of the page, we added, changed some wording to acknowledge the fact that staff don't always need to make suggestions and recommendations for a timber plan to be compliant with the basin plan. This was a comment that, or related to some comment that we received from people in the timber industry that that felt like it didn't acknowledge their work. And so we made that change. In finding 28, we changed the word requirement to provision. And likewise, in finding 29, we clarified that the non-federal timber waiver implements TMDL's and the basin plan objective by requiring the protection of shade-producing canopy rather than it providing shade. The process itself doesn't provide shade. There's a similar clarification in finding 30. The U.S. Forest Service program requires the retention of trees within 300 feet of slope distance. It's just a clarification about how the process works in that permitting process. I'd like to direct you now to finding number 38, which is a more substantive change to the resolution. Our staff had conversations with counsel from the Farm Bureau who felt that we had overstated this board's authority to affect water flows. And in fact, when we looked at it, we agreed that it was overstated. We can't, this board doesn't have the authority to ensure any flow because we don't have the authority to set flows. But what we can do is work with the Division of Water Rights to help ensure that flows are sufficient to achieve objectives. And so we've deleted some text and we've deleted as a means of ensuring and replaced to help ensure. And then the final sentence of that finding is redundant. And so we've deleted some of the text. The last sentence ends by saying, including but not limited to those addressed through the policy for maintaining in-stream flows in Northern California coastal streams. We deleted that because it's clear that we're talking about all the streams in the region, and so this is redundant. Final change I'd like to bring to your attention is related to the same topic. It's in resolved number 12, where again we're talking about our interaction with the Division of Water Rights. And the changes here are related to the same reasons for changing the previous finding, where we added the word help before ensure to make it clear that that we're there to assist, but we don't have the authority to set flows. And then we deleted quite a bit of text on the end because the way that text is written also overstates the board's authority to affect flows and really isn't necessary given the rest of the language in this particular paragraph. So that's the last of the changes that I'm walking you through. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
Great. Thank you, Brian. I appreciate that and look forward to digesting a few of these other changes that were in here. Are there any board member questions? Mr. Corbett?
Well, I don't have so much a question as a statement. I had hoped, I don't necessarily agree with the legal analysis, and I really think we need a legal opinion in some of the statements. You don't have a basin plan amendment that has no regulatory effect. I don't believe that's true. Whether it's narrative or not, it has some effect. It's considered a major regulatory element. I did like looking at the basin plan standards as far as looking at authority. I would have liked a little bit more in 13050, whether it's pollution, certainly for utilities, hot water discharges, but also for Pacific Core on a dam where there's a removal of the canopy, whether it applies to forestry or not. So I want a little bit more of a 13050 analysis. I did not agree necessarily with the water rights changes, and that's a very complex area of the law, but I'd refer people to Judge Roby's decision where he laid it out, or in his original law review article published in 1970, which I think is broader than the revised restrictions. So what I'm really saying is, on the staff technical issues, great. On the legal stuff, I think we need, I'm not comfortable with the record we have now, and I want legal counsel, and then certain phrases and characterizations I just disagree with. I don't think this is the place to get in all the nuances, but I did want to say I think we need to scrub up our legal framework considerably prior to adoption.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Brian. Ms. Corsi, I assume we have some folks who would like to chat about this. Thank you. All right. Take these in the order I received them. Mr. Matt Green, followed by Stephen Hall.
Morning. My name is Matt Green, registered professional forester. Had a few questions, a few comments. I know I can't ask questions, but I'll ask them anyway. I came prepared this morning to talk about what had been posted on the web, which was dated September 29th. Now I see a new order that's dated November 3rd. So most of my comments, I don't even know if they're valid or not because I don't have the 29th with me. So I don't know which comments we're really talking about today or which ones we're really talking about. Anyhow, most of my comments had to do with the fact that this board and other boards have different definitions for the term controllable factor. And I think that definition, if we're really going to start using this, really needs to be standardized. Whether the Central Board is right or Central Valley Board is right, Central Coast is right, all these definitions are different. I know Samantha has a belief in which one is right, but I just like to know which one is and why they're different. The idea of site potential effective shade, I think, really needs to be worked out before this order is adopted in the future. It's not a forestry term. It is not something that I use as a forester to define shade. It's just, it's something that we need to work on. I think we're working that direction. A third thing I would ask this board is that you have working groups for various things that are going on, for restoration projects. I think that a forestry working group at this point is prudent. Getting various people to sit down in a room and talk about forestry, whether it's professionals, RPFs, landowners, board members, staff, I think that's something that, you know, you guys are starting to realize we're starting to get into more and more forestry related issues, and it might help to just sit down. I know Mr. McFadden and Mr. St. John and I and one of our other foresters sat down 2 months ago and had a very good conversation. And most of it was about communications and where I was coming from with what I was reading and where they were coming from with what they were writing. So anyhow, I'm glad we're putting this off, but, you know, in terms of noticing, let's get the right thing noticed so that I don't waste my time coming down here since I'm volunteering my time. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Stephen Hall, followed by Daniel Myers.
Hi, I'm Stephen Hall, representing Friends of the Navarro Watershed. I have brief and broad comments to make. In my reading of this policy that's you've come up with to affect temperature, it doesn't seem to me to be the settlement terms that we agreed to, whereby the Navarro, which I represent, had specific treatment, as did the Eel and the Matole. And the rest of the watersheds had a more general treatment, which was going to be an improvement over the situation we had since the 90s. The TMDL process really seemed to have been a kind of purgatory that we were all left in. And I'm happy to say that Navarro is no longer in that purgatory, but it seems to me that, especially without mentioning and detailing staff requirements, that we're really talking about the continuation of that purgatory for the rest of those watersheds. And I certainly wouldn't have signed the settlement if I thought I was selling the rest of them down the tubes.
Thank you. Mr. Myers, followed by Ed Struffenegger.
Good morning. I'm Daniel Myers. I'm representing the Sierra Club. In 1997, the Sierra Club initiated litigation with others to make the EPA comply with the provisions of the Clean Water Act. We came involved in that suit, the three-year Klamath extension, and the current temperature policy settlement to clarify board's responsibility and to promote actions on the obligations of the state. In the past, there has not been an adversarial relationship with the board, and we would prefer to keep it that way. The issue we are considering today arises from the settlement of litigation that sets out a specific provision. That provision was drafted by the state and presented by the state in the settlement offer. It was not; it did not originate with the plaintiffs. It defines the temperature policy to be, quote, modeled on the settlement TMDL policy, 2004. Sierra Club has participated in and supported the 2004 settlement policy, and that the state has agreed upon as the model for this temperature policy. We have not participated in the drafting of this temperature policy, nor have we had access to it prior to its release for public comment. I've provided a copy of the resolution section of the 2004 settlement policy, which is our model. We urge you to read it. While it is the model, you will find little correlation with the draft temperature policy under consideration. The draft temperature policy references the 2004 settlement policy at paragraph 15, where it states, the 2004 Regional Water Board adopted a sediment TMDL implementation policy which provides for the control of sediment pollution by using existing permitting and enforcement tools. Statement is grossly misleading in that it implies the model sediment policy is limited to the use of existing programs. That is clearly not the case. As the 2004 sediment policy is a comprehensive collection of new actions and commitments needed to introduce an effective work plan. It is all about a work plan. The first two sentences of the sediment policy tell the story. The first sentence, the regional board hereby directs the executive officer to develop a work plan by year end 2005. The second sentence reads, the work plan shall set watershed priorities for addressing sediment waste discharges at a watershed-specific level and shall describe how and when following actions are being taken throughout the North Coast region. It goes on to list 2 pages of detailed actions to be completed in the development of the work plan. There's just 1 paragraph in there that refers to the incorporation of existing policies. The sediment work plan is a highly detailed 223-page plan. There are specific watershed tasks for every listed river in it. There are specific area plans for the entire region. There is a schedule for completion. It's a 10-year schedule. And there is a detailed funding schedule that details personnel requirements. It also calls for the development of a monitoring program, which completes the 3 requirements in Porter Cologne for defining an implementation plan, which, of course, the proposed document does not. Adopting a new temperature policy modeled on the sediment policy would be a strong complement to the sediment work plan that we have and a more convincing argument for the support needed for the obligations of the board. The product of the 2004 sediment policy is a significant work plan. The draft that we are looking at does not produce a similar work plan. It doesn't really have any need that it simply describes what we're doing. Yeah, that's all that it does. Temperature probably would not present that. The regional board, this is a quote, the regional board maintains that it has met all the obligations for implementing TMDLs. However, it has not consolidated all of its temperature TMDL implementation efforts into a single document that could serve as an implementation plan for meeting statutory requirements. This would ignore the breadth and detail of the model sediment work plan and address only a clerical task covering a single paragraph in the 2004 sediment policy. The existing programs on which the temperature policy would rely have resulted in the listing of essentially every watershed of the North Coast as impaired for temperature. The proposed draft would strangely define this record of failure as a solution for the future. Based on the disparity between the draft temperature policy and the obligations to produce a policy modeled on the sediment policy, we ask that you withdraw the subject draft and come back with a new policy closely modeled on the excellent 2004 sediment policy that the state has agreed to do in the settlement. There are other reasons brought out in public comment for not adopting this that we would agree with, but we think there's a real disconnect between what has been promised in that settlement agreement and what is offered here. And I think we should work to resolve that between now and January. And I hope that we would have the opportunity to actually meet and participate in this process as we have in the other litigations that have taken place. We've been joined in that effort. And here I feel we've been left, and I think you've taken a course that's going to be very bad for the board. I think you can't say we don't have to do this till 2013 and then set up a weak plan at this point that says, well, this isn't the plan. Of course it's the plan. That's why you have a date of 2013 on it. I don't want to fight on this. I think we should be working together on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. A question here. I don't know if any of the other board members have, but I have not seen what the settlement is. I've never seen a copy of it. Obviously there's a big...
Would you like me to read the paragraph at issue? Or
in a second, Mr. Corbett?
Well, that'd be fine, but I think when we have legal counsel do the other analysis, they ought to give an analysis of conformance or not with the settlement.
Well, that's and I'm not looking
for that. That analysis has been done.
Okay.
Council has completed that analysis. And so the statement that you heard Brian made is based on legal counsel's analysis. There is, Daniel's absolutely right. There is a discrepancy in expectations that came out of the stipulated agreement.
Exactly.
There is no doubt that that exists. And I think each side believes very strongly that they're right. I think it would be really helpful to sit down and talk it through. We look at the plain language of what was in the settlement and believe that's what we have done. Daniel disagrees, and we need to walk our way through that. So I would suggest that we sit down and have that conversation in the next month or so.
Yeah, I would strongly support that. Clearly this is, obviously we have a history of collaborating. We don't need to butt heads on this. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some opportunity where we can just make sure, we can agree to disagree. That's fine. But, I think we're all fighting for a common cause here.
Mm-hmm. And not to make too fine a point, Mr. Chairman, but the settlement agreement legal analysis is separate from the other legal comments I made that I do think need to be analyzed.
Understood.
Well, this is Samantha Olson, your counsel. It's true that Brian's presentation was based on a legal analysis that has been conducted, but it would be stated differently, and we'll figure out a way, Mr. Corbett, to get that in the record so that it is precisely defined.
Okay. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
So, Kat, then maybe you can follow up with Daniel, and you can set some time aside. Thank you. Ed Struffenegger, followed by Carrie Fisher.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and board members. My name is Ed Struffenegger. I'm representing the California Forestry Association. Just a few brief comments. First, I want to say thank you for the ongoing changes and amendments you're making to this resolution. I'm heartened to hear that there may be a chance to have this put off until January. Like Matt Green pointed out, there have been a number of last-minute changes made to the resolution, and we need to be able to look at those, digest those, so we can go ahead and see what's going on with that. So, but we do appreciate the dialogue with the stakeholders that who are going to be affected by this resolution, and staff and the board. With regards to a few more specific comments, first the change that was made. Not this last go-around, but the go-around before that acknowledged the anadromous salmonella protection rule package from the forest practice rules was very important, but I don't think he went far enough. I pointed this out when I testified here last time, is that I think we need to go ahead and have more of a nexus, more of a connection with the process, the timber harvesting plan review and approval process of which North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board is involved with that, and the final outcome in terms of shade protection and riparian strips. That is made very well with regard to the ASP or the anadromous salmonella protection package, but it is not made in a general sense for the rest of the streams and waterways that are maybe outside of the ASP purview. Another point I had was, and it was brought up by another individual, is that at the last meeting was that there's a great variability, a geographic variability, slopes, soils, temperature, everything else within the North Coast region. And we don't feel that there's enough emphasis placed upon this variability in terms of this policy. One last point I want to say is that the discussion about the stream bed alterations and water diversions, I see there is some new language in there about the Department of Fish and Game process, or that they have some regulatory authority, but I think that needs to also be stressed. The entire 1603 stream bed alteration agreement process on a project-by-project basis, or in many cases, large landowners have some kind of a large programmatic program in place with Fish and Game. Those need to be stressed and taken into consideration when talking about water diversions and impacts to riparian areas, also with regard to sediment coming into the system. And the last point I have is that the last presentation, Dr. Cajun James made a brief presentation, PowerPoint presentation, and I think she had requested that some of the models and assumptions and background information that the regional board uses to go ahead and come up with some of their points and assertions, if you can make those available for review, that would be very helpful so we can take a look at some of the assumptions behind the behind those analysis. But anyway, thank you very much for the opportunity to go ahead and comment. Thank you for reopening the comment period, and I think it's a good idea to go ahead and put this off until January.
Thank you.
I had one question, if you, in that as you mentioned the need for more variability, and I totally understand that problem, but usually that gets handled in watershed or TMDLs, and we don't have the money to do that. Do you have a structure from a regulatory standpoint you could propose that would give more variability based upon different conditions on the ground? Because I understand the problem, how to solve it is a little trickier.
Yeah, I think that becomes very complex because you have a number of now overlapping regulatory processes too, not just the variability within the geographic and the waters and the soils and the watersheds and orientation and all the physical things out there. But the regulatory processes in terms of different agencies and different boundary lines between regions and so forth with regard to those regulations would make this very difficult. I think if we wanted to go ahead and have something that would be more specific, I think we'd have to sit down and maybe propose something like that. We could maybe talk about some general language that would address that, but in terms of having a proposal now or some kind of an idea right now, no, I do not. So, okay.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Norrie.
Ed, can I ask you? Did you submit written comments on your 4 points here?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Now the one of the problems, and I guess the comment was made that some of the comments did come in late. Ours did come in late past the cutoff point of the public comments. Part of the problems with an association, of course, is that you have a lot of members out there and you have a lot of people giving input and reviews and things like that. So our comments didn't come in late, but I think most of the comments that we made, it looks like were in part or wholly adopted in the brand new version that's out on the table right out there. I was just flipping through to see what was added. But I want to go ahead and say that we need to have even more strengthening of some of the language that we proposed with regard to forest practice rules and forest practice rules outside of the ASP watersheds.
Thank you, Ed.
Mr. Chair, if you haven't gotten copies of the models, Brian can give them to you. The TMDLs are on our web, so we've been providing the material to anyone who has asked for it. So if you'd like it, we would be glad to send it to you.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Ed. Ms. Fisher.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is Carrie Fisher, counsel with the California Farm Bureau Federation. And CFBF would like to reiterate some of the comments you've already heard today. We appreciate the opportunity and the dialogue to have with the regional board and with staff on the development of this policy. And although we appreciate the late revisions that are reflected in the policy on the table outside today, we'd like to urge the regional board and staff to really take a look at the two sets of comments that CFBF has submitted. They're currently not on the website. That is also due to the fact that these were comments that were specifically requested of us by your staff and staff council. They were submitted in the last 2 weeks after specific dialogue we've had with your staff and staff council on certain portions of the policy. So we'd really like to see those points be incorporated in any future drafts that come before the board. One set of comments were specifically on the AB 2121 policy. Certain aspects of that was reflected in this new draft that is seen today. However, we had additional portions of comments on how your policy conflicts with AB 2121 still in the current draft. And so we would appreciate further examination of that specific comment that we submitted. And then we also have track change comments on the entire policy policy that were submitted early last week that we'd like to have incorporated into the current draft. And further, while I'm up here, and since Mendocino County Farm Bureau was not able to be here, they asked me to submit or comment on specific revisions. They did also submit a letter. However, it is not posted online, so they weren't sure if it was actually put into the record or not. Their main concerns continue to be the one-size-fits-all approach, as currently reflected in the policy, the continued push to not mention agricultural water as a beneficial use of water, the conclusion that all impacts to water quality are man-made with little recognition for naturally occurring impacts, the expansion of water quality programs into unimpaired waters, some of which may never be impaired, the diversion and storage of water automatically impacting temperature, and no mention of impacts from flood control reservoirs, and the expansion of AB 2121 jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just conceptually, what are the areas of inconsistency you think still exist? AB 2120. If it's very technical, then
yeah.
I'll just read it out of the meeting, but I wondered whether you could make a
They're really technical.
Okay, that fine. Thank you.
But part of it also is the season of diversion, and that's not reflected in your current draft.
Mr. Noren.
Mr. Chair, there's a number of comments here that are coming in late, and we're hearing about this now, and I'm struggling with that. We have I thought we're specific about a comment period here. I want to be inclusive on this.
That's fine. No, we were very specific what our comment deadline was. Ms. Fisher's request for her comments, although late, I'm inclined to look into that, because if she's saying that this was specific information that was requested of CFBF. But for the other comments, we have to set the deadlines for those comment period. And we were very clear the last meeting. We extended our comment period on this for a 2-week time frame, and we received comments within that time frame, but we also received some comments late. So those have not been entered into the record for that reason.
Mr. Chair, this is Samantha Wilson. Farm Bureau's comments, we received certain ones in time, but I just want to assure you that those were considered. We were having a dialogue, and so it's not like staff didn't ask for those and read them. So the changes in the current draft are reflective of those comments. Now, whether we want to post those or not is another question, but I can assure you, she's right that we were engaged in a dialogue, that we had a short term time to do that, and so those went a little bit beyond the deadline.
Okay.
But it's not like that was ignored, that comment letter, especially the second one that came in really late.
And what we did say in the last meeting was that we were taking these comments, but there wasn't going to be a formal response to comments. So whether there's been additional dialogue that's gone on with those, we accepted those. I know staff has looked at them. Obviously, the most recent draft has reflected some of those changes, so they have been taken into consideration. So it's just whether they got posted or not, and I guess that's a reflection of whether they were entered or not. Mr. Corbett?
Yeah, that was my point. Staff can reflect them in their changes going to the board, and I think that's appropriate. But the question we have to answer, what is in the hearing record and what isn't? And I also believe the chairman has considerable discretion on ruling. I'd recommend staff prepare a very short memo to the chairman with some kind of recommendation. These won't be in the record unless there's a favorable ruling by the chair, and then have the chair make a ruling in public.
That would actually be convenient for me, just to get an understanding of what all was received by what time. And in addition, for those who have been here that did send in comments that may have been late, you're here and you have given your testimony. As long as your testimony captured the flavor of the comments, then we have them in the record now for today. So.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Noren.
Samantha, can I ask a clarification? Because you talked about the Farm Bureau, but are you talking about Mendocino Farm Bureau or California Farm Bureau Federation?
California Farm Bureau. I'm not aware of any comments from Mendocino Farm Bureau.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. McFadden, do you have anything to add to wrap up? That was my last speaker card, by the way, if anybody else had some. Mr. Anderson? Bidetti? For item 6, did you want item 5? Please come on up.
Yeah.
Patty, if you would change item 6 to item 5 and give me Mr. Reinerson's speaker card, that'd be great.
Perhaps I read the wrong agenda item, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Thank you. Chairman Hales and board members, thank you for the opportunity to speak on this issue. Also, I want to really say I appreciate being able to work with staff on this issue. It's given the potential gravity of the implementation of this resolution, not just through this process, but through the entire timber harvesting plan review and all the ancillary issues that are related to that, I think it's important that we get the words right in here. And I guess the key thing is to make sure we take out phrases that have uncertainty. The site potential shade definition and description, while I understand it does have definitions other than that are seated within our Forest Practice Act or rules, et cetera, that the current way it's couched, it appears that if there's any diminution of shade to any water course, that you need to demonstrate that you're not violating the water basin standard. And I think that's a pretty onerous burden that could be placed on landowners. I mean, I know there's language in there now that moderates that, but I think maybe that needs to be a little more overt and a little more clarity. And I'd also like to remind the board that this has been a long process since the first stipulated agreement years and years and years ago that listed the original, I think it was 12 TMDL drainages, both for sediment and temperature. Forest practice rules have changed tremendously since those initial days. The last big change was 2009, implemented in 2010 with the anadromous salmonid protection standards, which now have 50-foot no-cut buffers next to old Class 1s and 25-foot no-cut buffers next to Class 2 large streams. So it's a huge change that has occurred in the previous so-called threatened and impaired rules that preceded those. Also provided, went from a overstory canopy standard that that some were very critical of to a very dense overstory, near-stream overstory canopy with 150-foot buffer, and those were implemented in July of 1999. So there's been a huge change in the forest practice rules over this period of time, almost all of it focused on maintaining and providing water quality protection and standards, mostly sediment, but also specifically for temperature and for recruitment and maintenance of large woody debris. So those standards have changed over time, and I guess I would also want to remind folks as we move forward with this that this particular resolution is in response to a stipulated agreement over temperature impaired TMDL drainages, and it's right now as it is moving forward, we'll have application across the entire region, a region that stretches all the way from the Lost River Basin and in the Upper Klamath to where we sit today. And there are many drainages along the north coast, and especially those that are in the northern part of this region and that drain directly into the ocean that are not temperature impaired, especially the 20,000-30,000 acre drainages that that have a great deal of coastal influence that maintain very, very cool temperatures and are key coho streams now. And those are maintained through the application of the regulations, of other regulations, both ERIS and forest practice rules. So I appreciate the fact that this puts together the so-called toolbox. It has all of those regulations and all of those mechanisms in one place. And I appreciate also the fact that it recognizes there are voluntary measures that are implemented through the habitat conservation plans that several of the landowners have that also help focus on those issues. So we appreciate that. I look forward to continuing to work with staff on this document.
Thank you. Mr. Corbett.
Yes, I did want to say the fact of extensive changes to the forest practice rule, I think this board is aware of it, and we're trying to figure out a way to respond. And I do agree with you that we need to have some way of reviewing that, looking at it from water quality, incorporating it. And whether that will come through staff meetings or board and staff meetings or board meetings, I don't think it's defined yet, but I think, and I realize the state of California and this board are ponderous in moving in that direction, but I think we are aware of the problem. We are aware we want a better solution than we have now, and we're trying to figure out the best mechanisms for accomplishing that.
Well, and John, you didn't ask me this question, but I'll be happy to answer for you. I think there are two ways to deal with the implementation of this with a site-specific basis without trying to do it through an amendment of the basin plan. One is through the individual timber harvesting plans. Clearly, especially for small landowners, that's the best approach through the NTMPs and through THPs. The other way is either on basin-wide or property-wide WDRs. I know that's approach we have taken. I know it's approach several other landowners in this room have taken. And that allows the very specific measures, you know, assess what are the limiting factors, what are the areas of concern, and then put measures in place that address those concerns.
Do you think the current regs properly reference that process, or would that be a way to accomplish that?
You mean the current regs?
Of area-wide waste discharge requirements or permits? I mean, do you see the current regs as inadequate, and there's a way to reference into that as
a
solution?
I see a need when you say proper regs, and when you say that, I'm looking at all of the different agencies involved in the timber harvesting plan review and approval process. There needs to be better coordination and recognition. We're still, while we have, we're almost better off with Fish and Game and with you folks dealing with the property-wide permitting opportunities, and we still have to deal with the piecemeal THP by THP by THP with CDF. So in the ideal world, you'd have a larger, longer-term, broader-based harvesting permit that was much more efficient than it is now, that recognized those other processes, including your WDRs and, for instance, MADOs that come through the Fish and Game, the Programmatic 1600 permits.
Okay. Well, I'll certainly read the regulations from that standpoint. So.
But I think there's huge opportunity there moving forward. So thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
I'd just like to clarify a few things. In regards to Mr. Hall's comments about the stipulated agreement, that we'd acknowledge that the stipulated agreement does identify specific treatment of the Navarro, Mattole, and Eel River basins in regards to temperature that would result in a basin plan amendment presented to the board for consideration, and we still intend to do that. This policy wouldn't preempt that. Although
I would clarify that we have different expectations of what that's going to look like, I wager, than what the folks out in the Navarro think.
That's certainly a possibility. What I was going to add is that those basin plan amendments are likely to include many of the elements that are in this policy resolution. I wouldn't say that they would be limited to that, but... we intend to follow through on all aspects of the stipulated agreement, but particularly those. In regards to comment letters received, I forwarded all the comment letters I had at the time of posting to our IT staff for posting. There were others that came in afterwards. They're not posted. I did not receive a letter from the Mendocino County Farm Bureau. I'd also say that I did look at the marked up version of the resolution that the California Farm Bureau Federation provided us, and we considered those changes. Many of those changes were inappropriate. I think that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Ms. Olson?
I'd like to also just briefly note on a stipulated agreement that Mr. Daniels is right that the section on the temperature policy was proposed by your staff and not plaintiffs in that case. And I just want the board to be real clear that it doesn't bind the board. That stipulated agreement is between regional board staff, the executive officer, and plaintiffs, and always contemplated that we would prepare a draft and then go into the public process. And so, you know, there's going to be some disagreements on interpreting that agreement, unfortunately, but just to be real clear, you guys are not bound by that stipulated agreement. The whole thing rests on what we're going to bring for your consideration. So, you know, we're trying to adhere to something that we proposed, but the policy was always a draft policy, and we included the elements in that stipulated agreement that we thought would make sense as a starting point on a draft.
Well, I just wanted to reaffirm that, otherwise we'd be pre-decisional under CEQA and the public hearing process. I did want to go to staff. I was not trying to be critical of staff on the late letters, but the job of the board is to make sure we have a clear and precise hearing record, and it seemed to me that it was getting muddied. And so it was not in any way a criticism of staff. It was more that the board needs to have this very clear prior to adoption, so that anyone who reviews the hearing record, or if it's appealed to the state board, we know what it is. Otherwise, very bad things happen legally. So I didn't want to imply any criticism of staff on that.
Yeah, I think we've been working within those guidelines. There had been, I was notified of late letters coming in past our deadline date. So it was not that I was unaware that, as the chair, unaware that those were coming in. So.
Well, I think if you do nothing, then the deadline holds. It might be cleaner if you ruled they're too late, or it might be cleaner if you ruled they ought to come in. But legal counsel can appraise you out of this hearing. I'm just saying, before I vote, I want to be able to tell people it's clear what's in the hearing record or not.
That cleared up by our next go around.
Yeah, great. I just remembered a couple more things I wanted to add.
Is that a late
yeah, all right. Your pleasure, right? So just a point of clarification, this policy resolution was never intended to be solely related to implementation of TMDLs. It's always been envisioned as a region-wide policy approach to implement TMDLs, but primarily implement the water quality objective for temperature. Another point is Mr. Rainierson pointed out that we can implement through property-wide or watershed-wide WDRs, and that's completely consistent with this policy.
One last concluding thing, Mr. Chair and Board, is staff will begin the process of the Basin Plan Amendment as we, you know, start looking at deadline scheduling and our project management path. So we believe that we're close to really done on this. We'll bring it back to you in January for final adoption. But in the meantime, we're going to start the process for basin planning on this, which you adopted and directed us to do under the triennial review.
And maybe just for the benefit of the public that are here, can you give us a quick breakdown of the process for basin planning? We do go through CEQA scoping, and the end product is going to be a document that is significantly shorter than what we have here in front of us.
It will. What you will have will be hopefully shorter language, something more elegant than what we have today, along with an implementation plan.
Okay. Thank you. Any other board member questions or concluding comments?
Just two questions, Mr. Chair.
Norton.
I would just pose it as a question. It may be useful to understand what is in that stipulated agreement, because that and I've just put it out there as a question. That's an agreement, it sounds like, was made between executive officer and staff and a plaintiff, and yet it does have ramifications in how this thing has gone. And in fact, we're talking this morning about the expectations of a plaintiff and how it's worked into this policy. And so that eminently affects the outcome. I don't know what's in that stipulated agreement. I don't believe I've seen that. So I don't know if that's useful. I would just put it out there as a question. The last thing would be is that we have a version here now, a strikeout version, which I don't know what number version this is. Matt Green commented that, you know, he's looked at many versions, and there's some version control here, I think, issues. So my question or my statement would be, I think we need to get one and final version on the web that's clean on this thing and post it once and for all.
The version that's on your website now is dated September 29th.
Correct.
Okay. I'll just repeat, Mr. Green commented that the version that's on the web now is dated September 29th.
That is correct.
Okay.
Mr. Norton, regarding the stipulated agreement, I also just want to make clear I'm not suggesting my previous comments were made not to suggest that we don't take that agreement seriously. I needed to underscore the point that it didn't bind the board. I do think we need to work with the plaintiffs, and you know, one of the fundamental disagreements, I think, unfortunately, even when at the time we signed the agreement, was ways for this board to capture efficiencies because of the reality of the staffing that we had. And so you're going to see differences in wanting really detailed work plans. We can either spend time making a work plan or we can actually be working. And so it's unfortunate that the agreement was signed still not seeing eye to eye on that point. And so what you're going to see is products that try to capture more efficiencies, more region-wide approaches, and moving away from the Garcia by Garcia types of watershed plans. And we'll continue to try to work with plaintiffs on why we need to move in a different direction, why it's important, why we still think it's going to be very protective of water quality.
And Mr. Vice Chair, I'll make sure you have a copy, a hard copy, before you leave today of the stipulated agreement.
I'd like one too, please.
Maybe we should just distribute it to the board. I mean, my point is, Sam, by the way, my point is, by the way, I thank you. I appreciate that comment. It just affects the outcome of this resolution, and it's an agreement that was made that was outside of the board, and that's fine. But as understanding as we get a copy of it today, it may shed light on how that's happened, and it may be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any concluding comments? All right. Thank you. We will hear back from you at our next meeting.
Great.
We'll close item 5. The board's going to take a 15-minute break and come back at 10:20.